Benvenuti al podcast di Antonino Saggio.
Today and during the weekend we're going to have a series of lectures about Louis Kahn, and we'll have also the opportunity to work a little bit manually with some of the instruments that the professor is going to explain.
Very good. Thank you, Lilian. Stai qua. I prefer that you are close to me. Okay. So we started this adventure that is divided in four parts. Okay. So we start quite soft today, and then tomorrow we go rather deep into the topic, and we are also kind of explain you some instrumentality so that on Sunday we can have a real workshop session. And then we have many ideas and how to make the thing the most interesting as possible. So today we go without break until a few minutes before four, okay? And I don't think that we'll do a break. And tomorrow, at what time do we see each other?
We start at 9.
Mm-hmm. There will be a 9?
9.
Yes.
Sharp, because
yeah.
We need to...
Okay.
When everybody starts, we need to be...
Okay, so we start at 9 start, and then sharp, and then we decide...
Have lunch break.
Lunch break, and then the afternoon we finish around 5 or something like that. Today is Friday, so we end up a little bit earlier, correct?
Yes.
And Sunday instead we have this section that will be, I hope, very interesting, because we put in action, we put ourselves in action. Okay, so, few things you are signing that cheat with your name, so I can more or less understand the audience. Okay, so the first things that you have to know is that all the material that you are going to see is already on the web. So you can look at it in the web, and we are using a lot of the web as a source of other information and to go deeper, etc., etc., etc. In the web there is also the chapter of the book that the old part, actually, it's not a chapter, three chapters that are those that concern Kahn, particularly Kahn, that as you're going to see is our major topic of today. You can send it, them to them via Facebook, or you put a post or whatever.
There's also the master blog.
I put it in several places. But we assume that since this is a really wonderful edition, and that many of you will have the original copy, at least the Albanese thing. I compliment the Polis to put it almost for free, because 80 euros is almost, in Italy costs 40 euros. Anyway, okay. So the first thing to understand is how you access information. My name is Antonino Saggio, it's really the only thing that you must know. Okay. The first choice is this one, and then if you click on this one, you are in this huge website. So Google Antonino Saggio, first choice, you are in my website. The website is really full of a lot of information that in this particular moment you are not interested in having, but the last information are that thing that concerns this important translation in Albanian of this book by Sotir Damo, Ledian, and all the group, and the conference that I made this morning. How many of you were at the conference today? Just to know. 3 out of 20. Bah, it's an interesting percent. Okay. And Okay, so today we did this lecture about the presentation of the book about Errani. Instead, now we do the master class, and the master class will be quite a number of hours of frontal teaching. So I will try to put yourself in this world, and then gradually we will move in Lucan architecture. We will understand why it is, how it is conceived, how you can duplicate, and what you can do with, which is the whole scope of this. So we approach this part rather softly, putting Lucan in the context of his time. Okay, so this is what we are going today. We are putting Kant in the context of his time in the 50s, and in the second part tomorrow. In the morning, we will follow on the architecture of Kant, and in the afternoon, we will go really deep in understanding the syntax, the way that Kant was making architecture. And then Sunday will be your turn. I will create an exercise that you can implement. Okay? Sounds interesting? Yeah. Okay. So at the end, you will be a little expert. So I put every time I need the link to go to the material, because I don't show the material public. You must know the hidden link to go and to find it. So you go in my website, that I just tell you why, and then I put the hidden link where? Where do I put the hidden link? On the lecture of today, I put the hidden link here. I don't know if you remember, right? Was here. And everything else doesn't go anywhere. But here was the link of the lecture of this morning. Today I decided to put it here. When there are these little people over here, you click there, so you are the only people that know where is this material. And it's a lot of material. It's all the material concerning this. And it's important for you to have this material, because you will go to all the material that is there, so it's important. Okay, and there are a lot of links that will be very important. Okay, just to give you an overview, this is the fifth time that I'm doing this kind of master class here. So we did it in the past concerning other architects and other elements, other key figures, but the whole approach that we wanted to have is the idea that not only understand historically or critically a personality, but to understand from a design point of view, as you can use as a design, so you can design in one way following the method of that person. So in that way you will enrich your capability, you know, and you know how to do things, not only why they are relevant. So in the past we did the Terragni. I put the link here just for my sake, you know. I put this one on Terragni and the whole work that we did on Terragni. And that was done in 2012. Then we did this section on Sauer in 2013, and we were working always, Legend was always with me from the very beginning. So he did everything. So we did Sauer, and in each of these, now there is also audio part. And in this part also will be later on audio. So the whole thing is there, and there is all the material, all the work, and everything that has been done in terms of implementation. And then we did the Peter Eisman in 2014. Same thing. So everything is here, and the audio is all here. You see how much time we spend on each of these persons. And there is also the exercise of actually building and designing a la Sauer or at the Eisman or as Kant as we're going to do. And then last year we did Gehry. So for me it was a very important decision on not to go and redo it one of these, that could have been of course rather possible and easy, but instead to open a new chapter. And this chapter is exactly Kant, But you are the first generation that has the Albanesia text. Before, everything was oral. Right? Everything was English and everything was oral. You are the first generation that has the book, which is a very big difference. Very big difference. That's why we suggested also that you can read a little bit before it. I don't know. Generally, students never do this. But we have always asked to, but never do it. But anyway, we know that by experience. So anyway, is there one person that read it? No one. You see, I'm right. 100% result. You say nobody did it. But we knew it in advance. That's why you have oral submission. Okay. But you will read later on. So we do this trip that is a rich trip that I wanted to, first of all, that you understand the historical relevance of the figure of Khan. Then later you understand the other layer. So with this click that I did, basically you see here, you are going to see all the picture that have been prepared for this. But for a sake of presentation, so everything it is there and it is in the web, you can explore, you can use, you can relook. But in order to be a little more sexy, instead of to put the web version, I create a higher resolution version. So you have a better quality of image. But you must know that everything it is there. Okay? Okay. Allora, vediamo come funziona questa cosa. Okay. It should work like that. And then it does this. Ok, non così, non così, ok, alright, mi spegni la luce per favore, so we can enjoy the image. Ok, so we are, first thing to understand the personality and the moments of Lucan. Lucan is born in 1904, so he's a man of the born at the beginning of the other century, and he died in 1973. So thank you very much. So he's a man of the 19th century, first of all, of course. In the book, he started to operate as an architect, as a young architect, and very, very, very gifted drawer and young faculty at the end of 20s. In the 30s, he was an operating architect within the rationalism world in America. In the 40s, he started to be an established professional, but really he became what we know as Lucan in the 50s of the other century. So here I wanted to put you a little bit in the atmosphere of the 1950s. Is a period, and in the book, we are dealing with the second part of the book that I called, ma se non funziona non fa niente. It's not a big deal. We are dealing here, we are starting the story from page 159, and come si dice in albanese questo, il significato, il titolo?
Rikriimi kuptimet.
So, the search for the meaning. This is, I put this keyword to really incorporate, in a way, with a keyword, the whole challenge of the architects after the war, after the Second World War. And so the search of the meaning in some way is the key word that started to really interest architects after the war. The whole thing makes a lot of sense if you imagine what tragedy the Second World War was. Basically, all the idea of mechanization, rationalization, modernization, that was those key words that were fundamental for the birth of the new architecture, when the war arrived, they showed the other side of the coin. So in the industrialization that was seen as only a positive conquer of the new society, of the new spreading of the welfare, it became the industrialization of death, the industrialization of the Shoah, the industrialization of the huge of millions of people killed by the war. So the same world that on one side was progress, future, good being, it became exactly the opposite. It means overall destruction at a level of mass destruction. That idea, in some way, coming out of that experience, the architects start to interrogate themselves, some of them, of course, we are always thought of the people that are more engaged, start to interrogate themselves on the real meaning of this hope that was related to the modernization of the society. They saw the other coin. And the same process was going into arts, and the same concept was going in literature, and the same concept was going in philosophy and so forth and so on. That's why after the war, for example, in philosophy, movement like that one by Jean-Paul Sartre, existentialism was called, was a kind of a key moment. In the cinema, for example, in the Italian cinema, that in the 30s and beginning of 40s was called the cinema of the white telephone. What does it mean? That in the cinema there was always this very elegant lady with this very gentleman with all brilliantina in the hair, very elegant like that, always with white phones. It became the neorealism instead after the war. That was the cinema of tension, the cinema of the new classes that were coming out to see the world that they were developed, they were exploited, etc., etc. But the same phenomenon was everywhere. So this problem of, in some way, is the idea of restart. The idea is to restart, to re-beginning, and find a new meaning. Mi avvicini alla lavagna, vi segno qualche parola chiave. This idea of a new beginning, a new start, was a fundamental idea after the war. And it was through different architects and through different models. So I start with this image, and basically the book starts with this image, because this is a key architecture of that moment. Grazie mille, Ledia. Portami il pennarello. Because this was a memorial that was built in Italy just after the Second World War, and it was the memorial of the Fosse Ardeatine. That's why symbolically it starts the book of this part, because this memorial, that is actually a wonderful architecture anyway, it is a very intense work that really goes to that idea of rebeginning, rebirth, restart from the base, reinterrogate ourselves about the meaning of architecture. So this is important to understand. As I told you, the process was going through the different, through the different arts. This is an artist that it is very, very well known to interpret really that moment and that feeling. This is Alberto Giacometti. It is a sculpture that started to create these figures just in those years. We are just after the wars. So you understand the atmosphere, the feeling, and also the drama, but also the hope of the beginning. So the figure of Giacometti. So here in the book, and also in this lecture, this first part of the lecture, it is important that we understand culturally, historically, and socially why certain things is so relevant. So I am kind of putting together some touches also in other art, not architecture, so that you can understand a little bit what's going on and why we are doing this. So we are starting here a path that will take more or less, we are 2% or 1% of what I talked so far. So we are going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. It's a long journey, so be ready. So we start with this. And then this is another image of Giacometti. Again, a very relevant figure if you understand within these coordinates in this particular moment. And this is another artist that really moved in the same year, in the same kind of coordinates. Jean de Buffet. The man, again, is a man that is in some way, I don't know, it is a man or it's a person that comes out of the gulag. These things are more realistic that you can see, that you can imagine. Because you have the images, you know, you have the first movies or the first pictures of what the soldiers found in this, during the war. People massacred by the bombing or escaping from the gulag or saved by accident. So those things that seem to be, in some way, is an interpretation of reality. It's not something there. So these deformed men, either by Giacometti or by Dubuffet, are really important if you understand within their moment and within their concept, and put you a little bit in this atmosphere. And this is another Dubuffet work. There is an Italian artist that is called Alberto Burri, that is also very, you can see the names, right? So if you want to write, although they are very small, but they are in the book anyway, and you will find anything in the web version. So Alberto Burri is another artist extremely interesting. He is, in his case, it becomes abstract. This tension becomes abstract. While the other two, either Giacometti and Dubuffet, you are figurative. You still can recognize the figure. Alberto Burri is completely abstract, but he's talking of the same world in some way. He's interpreting the same world in this collage of Utah on different materials, and these materials often were coming from the bottom, are material that you can find out of a bombing of a place. Very interesting, Alberto Burri was a sergeant as a profession that was changed into art. And he's a key figure. Now, this is a really, it's an important story, what is behind this monument. And in a way, very, very, very little, but there is a little coincidence that I was not thinking about. I was yesterday, or the day before, I went to Bologna to participate to the opening of a monument to the Shoah. This, why I was there, because one student of mine of many years ago called Andrea Tanci, I don't know if you never met in any course, probably there is a little shift between the two of you, they created a group and they won this competition and the building was opening just 1 year after the competition. That is a miracle. In Italy, it is a miracle that you cannot believe. So I said, all right, since this was my formula, since miracles must be celebrated, I go. Because if it is a miracle, you go to the Pellegrinaggio. So I went there, I cannot believe. So anyway, this was done, except. But actually, that is a micro story. The interesting thing is that just happened. The very important story is this monument. And the whole idea of rebeginning, a rebirth of the Italian as a country, as a society, as architecture, that was related to this thing. The very simple story, it is very simple, very dramatic, is that the Italian partisans made an attack, and they in Rome, and they killed 32 German soldiers. So it was a military action. And the German army decided to make this 1-to-10 ratio, so they took 330 people out of the prison. They brought in a cave that was called on the consular route of Rome, called Ardeatina. They put it in this cave. They killed 335 people. They made an excess. They killed 10 more. Doesn't matter. They killed 10 more. They didn't do the mistake. They are so precise, but in this case they do a mistake. And then they bombed the whole thing. They bombed the whole cave. So it was rather dramatic. And after the war, what happened? Vorrei una bottiglietta d'acqua, questo mi è indispensabile perché devo parlare a lungo e quindi non ce la faccio. Anche quella tua usata, non fa niente. Grazie, ma ho proprio bisogno, se no non ce la faccio. So, just in 1944, after Rome was liberated, they started to discover this thing. And so there were the family, hundreds of personal families, doctors, nurses. It was a huge event for the city to go there to discover this and to have the deaths coming up. So at the same time, it was made this competition. And the competition was won by young architects, very young architects, around the 27, 28. And immediately after that, was built this monument to the Massacro delle Fosse Ardeatine. So this, in some way, that's why this building is at the beginning of that part. Grazie, Laura. Grazie. It opens all this chapter, puts you in this. And besides everything, this is a masterpiece of Italian architecture, and it's still a perfect building. What they do, they don't do any rhetoric. That's why this place is wonderful. They don't do any rhetoric. There is this huge piece of stone, like, that is like heavy on this parterre of tombs. So this is the tombs, and now we are going to see in a picture. And on top of that, there is this huge kind of grave with only a slight horizon line that pass through. So it's very intense. And at the same time, once you have done that with 335 tombs, and then when that is done, you go around this path and you go and see the cave, because the cave has been recuperated, the cave where they were, the people were killed. So this is this image, and it's really very intense, one of the perspectives of the competition. So we started this chapter, again, with the idea of the search of the meaning. The search of the meaning is really the problem. This moment of restart, re-beginning. We cannot rely too passively to mechanization. We cannot rely to illuministic idea, because the illuministic idea can bring us well to war. This is what we discover. So you must in some way interiorize more. You must ask you more. And the artists, they were doing this job. They were not only the artist, not only the philosopher or the people that write or do movies. The artists participated to this. Let's touch a little bit what in this moment we're doing the big masters of architecture that already in the 50s has a status of masters. Le Corbusier, during the war, just after the war, he started to have this, many architects were thinking, how we going to restart? We must to educate, we must to do manual, so that we are sure that the society can progress. So the idea to create manual of good construction, of good dimension, of good things in order to help the generalization was very important. So Le Corbusier, within that, he interpreted that all a la Corbusier in his particular way. So he created this system that he was called the modular, that has several meaning, but particularly was a system of coordinated measure that going from the man in different position, as you can see, up to the man with the raised hand, 2 meters, 26 centimeters, medium height, etc., etc., etc. So without going in too deep, he was doing this system of that he was thinking that was at the base of a possible good architecture. And then he made this very important prototype for what he thought has to be the way to solve or to attack or to approach one of the key issues, that was the issue of reconstruction, because all cities the cities were destroyed everywhere, so was a need, and the need of popular housing, rational popular housing. So he built this first prototype for Marsiglia. He was friend of the mayor, and the mayor had this vision to allow him to do that. This is a must for every architect because it presents lots of interesting issues. Basically, you have to interpret this as a ship or as a transatlantico, as a big ship, and the big ship is basically autonomous in itself. It has lodging, it has a service, it has a free space, and is really autonomous from the land. That is the whole idea. In fact, this is almost suspended, like a sea in the thing, with these big pilasters. And in order to do that, these big pilasters don't go up. Then the structure changes in a 3.60 meters span. So you have to do it a transition between one and the other. Then you have all the lodging, and all the lodging are done with this very interesting system. They are duplex apartments from an inner corridor. You can see here. Either you go up, so you have half apartment here, half apartment on top there, or from here you go here and then you go down. This double height corresponds to the living area, while the smaller one relates to there. And here in the roof, as in any ships, you have the place of leisure, the place of being on open air, a childcare, a place for sport, etc. And on the seventh floor, you have other services that we saw over there, here in this area. So this prototype was so important for all the architects, all the students of architecture. Everybody must be able to draw this by heart. If there is one person that he is not able to draw the plan, the section, this by heart, he just does not belong to this profession. It's as simple as that. It's the first task that you could do for one person that you want to hire. If this person is not able to draw by heart, Laura, It's like to say ABC. It's inconceivable that you don't know by heart how to draw this. We are not talking about Le Corbusier this time, but to tell that there is some key things that everybody knows. So we're talking about unité d'habitation, plan, section, things, because it's one of the plays of architecture. So what's done in that moment? Here it is. By the way, the book, as all these masks are in the books, and it's not a case that I decide for certain images, because so in the book there are the plans. It's not by accident that there are the plans, because the book is a mille foglie, is a torta that is a mille foglie, and some level are very so intellectually sophisticated, but others are very simple for like beginning students. So they, at least they have the basis of what they must know. Okay, so this is the famous double level. This is the roof deck. And this roof deck is also a lot of poetical work. So out of this idea of Le Corbusier came a movement of architects that they called themselves brutalists, or was called brutalism. And these are particularly British architects, and particularly two British architects. It was a couple, Harrison and Peter Smithson. So they will say, okay, now we, looking a little bit of Le Corbusier and putting it a little bit at the extreme, we said, okay, architecture must show what it is. There is no more nuances, there is no more proportion particularly studied. Architecture must be brutal in a way, must really show what it is in its own mechanism, rather functional, constructive, or whatever. So they developed a whole movement and a whole aesthetic that was called brutalism. And this brutalism in a way makes sense within that particular cultural historical moment. It seems to be a logical answer, like going back to the real basis, basically. No? It seems something logical, and it was successful. This is the famous first school that they made with this approach in the beginning of 50s, called brutalism. Here it is. Here it is, and gives you exactly that idea. This is not a Miss Van der Rohe sophisticated detailing and abstract perfection. This is thing like this, material like it is, and this idea to really present themselves. Rather radical, like typical British architects. And then there was another very interesting person in Italy, not too much known, but very important, that was called Vittoriano Di Ganò. Vittoriano Di Ganò was the Italian way of the brutalism. He particularly built this school, una specie di collegio per bambini che hanno problemi o poveri. This school in credo che si chiama Istituto Marchiondi. He was into that approach. And this is Vittoriano Di Ganò, so we are moved in Italy with that. Another thing that was kind of important within this context of rebuilding, restarting, rethinking, and basically re-beginning, was the idea that basically in order to tackle the issue of reconstruction, to tackle the issue of production that was needed because of the destruction of the world, because of the urbanization and so, the issue was prefabrication, the intelligent study of prefabrication, which was not something that in reality was at the beginning of the modern movement. There was no idea. The modern movement was very strong, the idea of the 5 points of Le Corbusier, the transparency, the pre-organization of the plans, etc. The issue of prefabrication started to be a little important close to the war, particularly in America. And in Europe arrived after the war, and Jean Prouvaire is the one of the key figures that studied that. In Italy, within that context, they were experiment in a kind of mixed way, in a way. There was this idea of the coming back to the rural. That's why this morning I show all those things in the 60s, Pagano, etc., because those things were not only general cultural things. In some way they create this kind of hope. If we have to re-beginning in a way, let's re-beginning from our rural tradition, in a way. That was one of the thinking that was active after the war. So it was to rebuild, restart almost from scratch, let's restart from our rural tradition. So that it was this kind of combination between certain ideas of the contemporary time, certain ideas, certain material, certain form of aggregation of the rural world. Still in Italy, after the monumento at the... Because Italy had a very, very rich and interesting culture and in the whole field, architecture, art, literature, cinema, from the 1945 to 94, for the next 20 years, in 1965, more or less. In those areas, Italy was really relevant in many aspects. Imagine design, imagine architecture, imagine literature, imagine cinema. Then the country kind of collapsed in itself and was not able to create important cultural artifacts until architecture day modernity arrived. Okay. Kidding, but not so much. So this Stazione Termini is another real masterpiece done in that moment. Again, the story is fascinating of this building, because the building was the old station of Rome that was done in 19th century. Then, during the fascism time, they modified having a very kind of neoclassical site and a super neoclassical front. Super neoclassical front. Because Italy, around 1939, 1940, became allied with Germany, and the alliance was not only in killing Jews, was also in making, in killing architecture. So they created these kind of super neoclassical things. But after the war, when the country was vital and made a thing such as that monument, the group of young architects were able to stop that, the construction of that facade, how it was thought. And so this group of young architects, and Bruno Zevi was the first, the organizer of them, they were able to have a competition organized. So I think that for the standard of today, you think are inconceivable. Instead, all these things were done. So they stopped the construction, they have a competition, and a new group won, and the new head of the Stazione Termini was a success of the new avant-garde, in a way, you know? An avant-garde that, of course, is an avant-garde that rigged also Italian tradition, Italian capability of construction, so on and so forth. That's why also the Stazione Termini is a kind of an important must in this re-beginning. Another very interesting architect is Ridolfi, another one that was moving in this. Ridolfi is known also because he wrote and drew particularly Il Manuale dell'Architetto. He was the key figure, Il manuale dell'architetto in America, for some reason you call American Graphic Standard. I never understood why they call the manuale American Graphic Standard, but it's called like that. Il manuale, the manual, that means that you have 500 pages, you open the page garage, and you see how the garage is done, what dimension you have to do. Okay, you open the page staircases, and you have how to do all the dimension, the calculation. So it's something very, very important to create a professional base. How you do the windows. And I still have the original version of Ridolfi. Okay. So, and then this is another architect, always in this cultural climate, that is called Adalberto Libera, and this is another one that is called Zaneri. We are always moving in these years, and I'm moving in concentric circles, you understand? I'm moving like this. And my interest is Lucan. We never talked about Lucan so far. I'm just moving around, okay? I'm moving around in order that you understand why in that particular moment is figure was relevant, okay? So we are going around. This is another interesting group of architects. This is called BBPR. I mentioned also them today. They made this monument to a poet of the South, Rocco Scodellaro, that was a poet, a countryman poet, and that was, I think he died for some mafia or something particular, if I recall well. But anyway, this was the monument to this poet that again puts you in that type of atmosphere. In America, what happened? It happens, we're talking after the war. There is this incredible couple, the Ames, that are marito e moglie, husband and wife, that in California they did a lot of things very interesting between the 40s and through the old 60s, and also they experiment with this type of, let's say, prefabricated construction in giving, this is their own house, by the way. And what was doing the other big master, that is Frank Lloyd Wright. Frank Lloyd Wright, after the war, he started to be kind of fascinated with something that up to that point he was not interested in. He's amazing. He's a man of 80 years old that basically he was operating since 80, 90, because Frank Lloyd Wright was an architect of success, at the end of 19th century, and we are talking of the 50s, so we are talking 60 years after his beginning. So, strangely, starting with the Guggenheim, for a series of projects that he did in that moment, he started to be interested in curvilinear form, while up to that point, actually that was not a topic, he was interested in other types. He made hexagonal, he made, of course, rectilinear, he made a lot of things, but not so much of circular forms. And he said he started to be interested on that. This is a fantastic, beautiful house. It's a prototype of how you can do a house that is organized on a circular. Sometimes the students arrive to you with some type circular. And then you have to send them to study this for 3 days, and then come back and do it again. Because there is a geometry, a sense and an organization making circular. Otherwise, the things that make circular are made boom, boom, boom. So if you look at this plan, how the plan it is organized, where it sits, how it opens on one side, it protects on the other, the implication in section of this thing, this is, of course, it's a work of a master, although very small in its dimension. So, Didi was doing this, and then, of course, the most well-known thing is the Guggenheim Museum, that he actually started to design around 1943, more or less. It was finished, basically inaugurated, I think, few days after he died, because he died in 59, if I recall well. I can be wrong. So again, this is how he was doing, and Le Corbusier was also doing in. I put this because basically the idea of some of the functionalist thinking was that there was a correspondence, you know, between an organ and a function. So, which is one of the most naive ideas that you can have. You wake up in the morning, you are very naive, and you think that there is this correspondence. Of course, there is a little bit this correspondence, but the body is building so many other systems that this is one, like a childish idea, you know. There are all the systems that ties together the body. It's not only a one-to-one correspondence, but anyway, let's not open this too much. And so anyway, this was funny because he built this building in Harvard, and this was something that is coming from something on Le Corbusier that he was making this correspondence. And this is another masterpiece of architecture, again built more or less in the same moment, in the 50s. This is the MIT dormitories by Alvarado. So we are talking really mass of architecture, things that you, of course, you know. If you don't, it means that you have a small problem to face. And this is a dormitory. I describe you a little bit this one, because we are going to spend a lot of time with a dormitory with Lucan, so we will understand differences. This is a dormitory. What does it mean that it is a dormitory? That is a place for student housing. In the United States, it's normal that the students of the third year maximum, they sleep in the dormitory and then they move in their own places. So the dorm, it is the place where the students have the unit. And this is one built by Alvar Aalto, which you see immediately when you see even these only two things, the plans and this image, how peculiar this is, and actually how beautiful it is. What he does, Alvar Aalto, I talked today a little bit in the lecture, is an architect that is able to build his knowledge and his expertise and in how to, on the basis of the achievements of the modern movement, of the new architecture, but at the same time give a very personal interpretation that is related to his culture, the fact that he's finished, the fact that he has a very peculiar way of thinking and the relationship of the natural. So, what is the basic issue when you do student housing? Avoid those horrible, terrible, useless corridors. Basically, that's the problem. How you can create small units, but at the same time give life to the connection between the individual person that lives in the single room, the major service like Mensa or laundry or other things, and the all intermediate scale from one to the other. So you are not in kind of situation, little room, corridor that you prefer to die instead of crossing that. Instead, basically, Alvar Aalto had a very strong idea how to create a sequence of spaces going from the very private room to the larger, to the medium, intermediate sphere of semi-communal space to the most communal space. So look what he did. So he creates, first of all, look at what a machine is this one. He creates rooms of different sizes. Here you see. So probably these are larger rooms, And these are smaller rooms organized along this part. Then, in some way, and then this idea is really gives you the sensibility of the architect. Although the major part of the room are placed on this side, basically on the other side, it is not a strict rule. In some cases he put other things on the other side, or to take advantage of the corner, or things like that. So, then he puts some common services over in some other peculiar situation. What happens? That the so-called corridor is not the typical corridor I prefer to die or go to Sing Sing. It is a place full of events. Because you basically, here is shadow, here it is light again, here it is shadow, here is light, here you can sit, here you can smoke your pipe or whatever else. And then it's all like that. It's all series of events. And this comes more and more because of this shape, of this famous shape. Why there is the shape? The shape it is done to take advantage of the view of the sun and particularly of the river. Because this part looks at the river. So in this way you create as much as possible, and at the same time with the movement you accompany the river. Then what he do? When he has to put some special spaces like either entrance or men's, etc., you plug as a plug-in, he puts where it's needed. So this image, what you see, it is basically the so-called service size. So here, this view is not the side of the river, it's the side of the camp. And what you see here, it is something that somebody will answer, so we start to have fun. So, what is this? This element, okay? Rinor, Z, Quiri, Pad. He went away? Or is here? Okay, so, the question is, what is this? And what is its function? Rinor, let's make an hypothesis. What do you think they are? You want some water? Ah, bravissimo, they are stairs, exactly. And what do they do, those stairs? Eh? They connect the different paths, basically, over here. This is a lower plan, so you don't see. But basically, are some elements that are over here that connect this corridor, let's say corridor, on the outside also. So it will, these corridors are always full of events. This is what I wanted to tell. So something that was considered normally just a corridor, here it becomes instead a place that makes articulation in the facade, that connects, and the students go from one side to the other, and they are all very alive, extremely alive. And this is what the Alto is a master with. I have this because I remember that I went to see this dorm like 9 in the morning of a Sunday. So I remember to see all the students after one of these nights in the dorm, Laura, tu capisci? They were all spread everywhere, sleeping here and there. So I remember this corridor that was full of these events like 9 in the morning that they've done evidently something, lots of fun. But all those spaces were alive. Okay, Alvarado made in this moment other architecture. This is project in Finland, that this is homeland, and he made also this wonderful little house that is a house on the lake, or Musalo, is the lake of him and his new wife, like a secret house in the wood, really in the middle of the wood, very Very interesting. I was very lucky to have been there, to have seen it, because certain things you really understand if you put in their own atmosphere. This is really, this little house in the wood is very interesting, very nice, and he uses it in many, many ways. It's a kind of courthouse that is not exactly a courthouse. Very small, very tiny, very minimal in terms of spaces, of luxury. There is nothing like that. This is instead what Gropius was doing, so we are touching the master, basically, in the city. This is what we are doing. Gropius was, of course, the head of the Bauhaus. He had to escape Germany. He stayed in England for a couple of years, and then he went to America. And in America, he started this idea that architecture is a process, a teamwork, is a process of coordination and of really kind of a process of sharing of ideas, of sharing of expertise, and a completely anti-star approach. So teamwork was the basis of his idea. So basically the rules of functional architecture was like the forces behind this famous teamwork, and this is Harvard that he made within this principle, the Harvard campus, in which he was dean, by the way. Still in '50s and talking in America, the other person was Mies van der Rohe, another person, key, and the Mies van der Rohe was also the head of the Bauhaus after Gropius. Also Mies van der Rohe was pushed out of the country a little later than Gropius, so he had to emigrate and he went to America. In America he made this campus, the ITT campus, and also he was very much supported by a young intellectual and architect, actually he became an architect only later, but a young intellectual, it was called Philip Johnson. And Philip Johnson considered Mies van der Rohe his hero, and particularly the right architect to make quality architecture in America. So the issue of Philip Johnson is how to make good architecture in America, how to make architecture with a capital A, and not just suburbia in style or neoclassical or whatever, but really good architecture. And so the system à la Mies, that was perfection in detail in construction, a very abstract and simple form, and a kind of an idea that architecture is a neutral container for activities, this kind of mixture of idea was the formula that that Philip Johnson used to push a lot Mies van der Rohe as the right answer to America. And this was something that started already in 1932 with an exhibition, the International Society Exhibition. And after the war, Mies was the way to go. And actually, it was in some way the winning paradigm in the 50s in America. Mies started to create a school, so there were many other architects that were doing à la Mies. Mies was teaching, was the head of the ITT, Institute of Technology in Chicago, so he had his own student, architect and assistant, and he himself built quite a number of buildings in America, and Philip Johnson was his, let's say, his intellectual coté, that's extremely rich also economically, was the cultural pushing. This actually is a work that you may think is a Mies van der Rohe. Instead, it is Philip Johnson making the architecture a la Mies van der Rohe. Okay? Philip Johnson started to build around his old mansion of the family. He started to build pavilions, and starting with this one and then many others in the other 30 or 40 years. And basically these are little pavilions like a guest house, you know? And Gary did, the Venturi did, and many other architects did, like in these big properties. And this was, I think this was the first that Philip Johnson himself made in the beginning 50s. But just this to tell that the winning paradigm, who was winning the battle in America in that moment, was Mies van der Rohe. The system was a la Mies van der Rohe. So this type of what is the symbol really of this approach is this building. This building is a museum. And although it was built in 1661, but this really incorporates one of the main idea of Mies, like to build very simple and perfect construction, and this simple and perfect construction in some way may host whatever activity they want. The space becomes like a continuum universal concept. The space is not related to function, to a specific function. The space is a container, a neutral container for activity to take place. That's why, basically, when you go and see a Mies building, it doesn't make any difference if it is a building for a museum, a post office, or a campus building. They are all the same. But they are all the same because there is a philosophy. It's really this idea of universal space. So this is something against which Lucan will attack. This is exactly the point in which Lucan attacks. Counterpart. He creates an alternative to this idea. This idea as the winning paradigm, again, was this idea to interpret the technology in its abstract perfection of points and elements. The space, it is homogeneous, universal, and can contain anything. The architecture is like pure objects at the end. They can be, they are kind of abstract monoliths. They are kind of abstract monoliths. And that's why the Seagram building is in some ways the quintessential. It's the quintessential of this idea, no? It's this absolutely perfection of this parallelity, and that is the way and the winning paradigm. So, to this point, arrived Kahn. And exactly to this context, you have to understand. You have to understand Kahn as a figure that will try instead to put at the center the meaning of architecture. And in order to really put at the center the meaning of architecture, he has to demolish all the idea of Mies van der Rohe. Each point of Mies van der Rohe becomes in Kahn exactly the opposite. Exactly the opposite. He's doing a work and that in a way want to rebase architecture, and the rebase of architecture cannot be on one side on the meaning and on the other side, as we are going to see, while the whole idea of Mies is that one of in some way, independence of the part, that is a typical modernist idea, all the idea of Kahn will be exactly the opposite, will be the fact that the part of the construction will become altogether again. So, That's why Tam becomes, in the 50s, in the middle of the 50s, really an hypothesis to make architecture differently. And he has his reason to do that, and he has his influence that is extremely fundamental to understand. Now, we have 15 minutes. So what we are going to do tomorrow morning in specific, we are going to really go into Lucan as architect in the morning, and in the afternoon I really will go in the way that he does things, you know, from a real design point of view, a real architect point of view, because in some way, someday, you are going to simulate this. That is the reason. Few points now to put the figure of Kahn again in the context. So, following this chapter, if you look at this chapter, this part actually, which is located Kahn, I wanted to go in the book, so you will familiarize a little bit. Okay. Okay. Let's see the Albanian version. Okay. So let's familiarize with the book so we can the book is divided in 7 parts, right? No, in 8 parts. Each part covers more or less 10 years, and each part focus on one issue, one crisis that becomes the key to interpret what's going on in that particular moment. Naturally, this is the first level. The other level is all the things that are relevant for architects, like figures, architecture, open works that you must know. And also the book is done in a way that it will really describe the work in a way that an architect wants to be described. So not because of literature, not because of... I woke up one morning and I found these ships close to this wonderful piece of architecture, how beautiful, I'm crying. But he's telling how it is done, what are the choices, the architectural, spatial, constructive choices that are behind. Okay, so... okay, so we are discussing of this part, right? So this is the period, and these are the chapter, right? The first part he deals with those aspects of art and of architecture that we were discussing. Then in this part there is the things that I touched a little bit about these people, Wright, Alvarado, Gropius, and Miss van der Rohe, as we talked, to really put Kahn into action. Then there is this big central part dedicated to Lucan, that is what we are going to discuss more tomorrow. And then there is this other final part, because in some way I see Kahn as a point in which architecture kind of comes together, like the figure is like this. Kahn is the place in which different things come together, try to be united again, and then when there is that effort of unity, that is really what Kahn tries to do, after that things cannot move, has to move again, out again. So basically what is happening after Kahn is the opposite process. While Kahn tends to concentrate, after things will start to liberate again and to in some way explode again, but in a different way. So, let's see very briefly how it is done in the book, so you will familiarize with it. Okay. Okay. So the book starts with this image that we just saw. Okay. And okay, meters proposed. Okay. All right. So it starts with that. We saw that image, and then we move to this aspect that we discuss in all of them. There is this section dedicated to the Monumentale Fossa Ardeatine. You see always that I pick the image in a way that are the minimum necessary image to support what we are saying, because this is a book of 600 pages, so we don't have plenty of spaces, but the images that have been picked have been picked exactly to give you the information. Bourrier du Buffet, Le Corbusier. Here we talk about the brutalism. That's why I put it the plan of the unité. Somebody who has problems in drawing it, be sure to be able. And the discourse that we were doing on right, and again, that's why I put it the plan and the things about Alto, because that's such a wonderful plans that are things that to know. And then we start with Cannes, and this is what we are going to talk tomorrow. And what happens after Cannes? So tomorrow we understand what Cannes is doing, what it is doing. What happens after Cannes is start another story. And the story is the story of liberation of form. Why Cannes, as we are going to see, will concentrate altogether, and he needs to concentrate to refine the meaning, to refine the sense of architecture. And so it's all operation of concentration, and to give sense of space, to give sense to construction, to give sense to light, etc., etc., and particularly to give sense to function, or what he calls the institution of man, that is the way that he calls function. After him, he starts the opposite process. It's a process that starts again to give importance to the manipulation of form per se. And believe it or not, these processes are the engineers that start it. Because the engineers, believe it or not, in the 50s are the freer of all. They experiment with form in a very advanced way, so in some way they liberated form. So form in that moment doesn't have to be rooted in the old system of meaning that Cannes was doing, but gets liberated. So the engineers start this process, and here I'm talking of some, particularly the Spanish Torroja, Nervi, and Morandi, which is amazing on this part, and particularly Eros Aharinen. Eros Aharinen is this extremely talented architect, and which has a sense of cultural mass very strong. He's a son of an architect, a very important architect, from Finland, moved to America, create a whole campus and city, so he's a talented and lucky young architect, died unfortunately very young. Mansarinen is one of the greatest architects, liberated form through this type of expressive of form structure per se. He's one of his most famous TWA terminal in New York. And then the other world arrived, the world of Brazil, the world of freedom, the world of cultural form, also a little bit anthropometric, etc., etc., etc. And then finally arrive this other important event, that is this young, very young British Danish architect, Jørn Utzon, win this competition in Australia. And this is the breaking of all the taboos of the modern architecture, destroying Cannes, destroying Le Corbusier, destroying Wright, everything. In fact, they hated everybody of that generation, not even talking about me. All of them hated this architecture by reason, because they knew that being the business, how much this was something completely new, breaking new rules and opening a way of looking at architecture that was completely different. So basically in the second part of the 50s, it opens this movement of liberation of forms that will bring of other phenomena in the 60s and then in 70s, 80s until today. Okay? So kept going back to all this and instead looking at the of this, we will start looking at Cannes from this image. Okay? So the pyramid. What more than the pyramid? This is a drawing by Lucan of the pyramid. So we will start tomorrow with Cannes of the pyramid. Please arrive in time, because the beginning is the most important moment. Because it is in the beginning that which we put the foundation of the thinking. If you arrive 20 minutes after and you miss the beginning, you will never understand, because you are not put in the right path. So we will start tomorrow by this, and then we tomorrow all our vision will change completely, because we will talk a lot, and I hope I will give you real tools and instruments to work. Okay, so I think for now it's okay. If the books are arrived and somebody wants, we will sign it, and then we'll do whatever.
Yeah,
if there are questions, of course, I'm open to questions.
For the books question, the books are in the coffee house, because they could
okay.
not bring them here, but if you want, you can take them there and come here.
I will be here to sign for whoever wants. Are there questions? Okay. We started this part.